My name is Michael Finley. I'm an alcoholic. First, I want to say thank you to God to be alive and to be awake, awakened in this spirit, awakened in this process, and for the opportunity, for the change that has taken place in me, and for the opportunity to continue to change. Mm-hmm. I thank the Westfield Big Book study group for having me here. Thank you, Rich, Patty Ellen, for getting me the commitment here, Mark, for putting up with me and all the different things that you have to do with the recording and everything that you do here, Denise. Thank you very much, you know. Pete, Carol, Karen, young man for coming all the time. It's great having you here, and everybody who comes out, Mike and Tim and all the fellows who come out, thank you. We are in all this together. And I've said it before, you're going to hear somebody speak better than me on the 11th step. In fact, they may be coming soon. And you may have heard someone speak better previously. And we're going to get to a point in this gig where you're going to say to yourself, he forgot to mention that, he didn't say that, we didn't cover this. And you're right. I won't, and I didn't, and if your experience is different, and your sponsor is probably right, and you should listen to what, you know, he has to say about it, or she has to say about it, because this is your experience. Right now, I'm going to talk about mine, which is to discuss step 11, how we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying for only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. First, I want to do the gut check, right? The step 11 gut check. It's on page 88. Okay. Now, this is a great question to ask everybody. Everybody should ask themselves this question. 2 days sober, 11 years sober. Dave, thank you for coming out, too. This means a lot. 2 days sober, 11 days sober, 11 years sober, you know, 20 years sober, 2 days sober, right? These are just some great, great questions. In particular, I guess, if you have some time. But on page 88, am I in much less danger of excitement, or am I in danger of excitement, fear, worry, anger, self-pity, and foolish decisions? Currently, right now, where am I at? You know, do I find myself being fearful of things a lot, angry at things a lot? You know, filled with self-pity, poor me. Am I making a bunch of dumb decisions? You know, or am I still living in the result of a whole bunch of foolish decisions? You know, if I'm doing this thing thoroughly, I'm not. The answer to these things are yes, I am in much less danger of these things, right? Because I have an awakened spirit. I have an awakened heart. I have some an experience with truth. But what is my truth? What is our truth right now? Am I in much less danger of excitement, fear, worry, self-pity, and foolish decisions? Am I efficient? Am I tiring? Do I find myself tiring easily? Right? Now, not just walking up the flight of stairs. I find myself getting that way as well. Right, but they're not talking about this. Right, they're talking about, you know, getting all of the things that that we get done through the day. You know, putting the kids in the car, going, you know, driving off to the practices. You know, coming home from work, driving to and from work. You know, am I getting tired at work? You know, am I physically present, mentally, physically, and spiritually for my spouse, my partners, my coworkers, my friends, my sponsees, my sponsor? You know, am I present in these meetings? Am I falling asleep here? Right? What's this, you know, am I awake? Right? Or do I find myself always being tired? Right? Because they say here, being tired easily, you know, or am I burning up energy foolishly as I did when I was trying to arrange life to suit myself? Am I still trying to arrange life to suit me? Am I still trying to put all of the things just the way I want them so that I can be happy, you know, so that you can change to be the person I want you to be, so the job can really learn that I've got everything right, and they should really do things my way, right? And where areas in my life am I like that? You know, for me, every time it's baseball season and spring training, you know, I got a whole list of the way the Yankees should be running their business, right? And the way baseball should be doing things, and football's making all these changes and all this other stuff, you know? Am I spending a lot of time just angry about stuff like that? Football, politics, you know, the way whoever is the president, not the president, all these other things. Am I uptight about these things all the time that I'm not even able to be present for, you know, a church community or an AA meeting? Or a friend, right? You know, it's a gut check. Where am I with this stuff? Am I burning up energy foolishly as I used to when I was trying to arrange life to suit myself? Or am I still trying to arrange life to suit myself? Am I an alcoholic? That's kind of funny to ask, right? Mm. You know, we're here in AA, right? You walked in the door. Does that mean you're an automatic alcoholic? No, it doesn't. It means that you may have had an experience with alcohol, or somebody around you has had an experience with alcohol and made a couple suggestions that you come here. But it says here, page 88, you know, am I undisciplined? But do I believe I'm an alcoholic? Getting this far through the game, do I believe that I have that mental obsession that's always going to lead me back to a drink when I'm not having a drink, when I'm sober or dry? Do I have that mind that always brings it back to me? Do I still at this time believe that I have that physical allergy that when I put booze and other things into my system, I'm just asking for more, 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 and I don't know when that time is going to end. I don't know when that's going to stop. Do I believe I'm an alcoholic? Do I feel restless, irritable, and discontent unless I get, you know, a couple of hits off of a Heineken or a couple, you know, a couple of fingers on a scotch, right? You know, sometimes, you know, I get ease and comfort just driving to the liquor store, right? Do I believe that I am a real deal alcoholic that we've been discussing for the past whatever amount of time, or what your step work was on the first step? Do I believe when I'm an alcoholic? Right? And am I an undisciplined one? Well, boom. I'm going to tell you right now. I am definitely an undisciplined human being, and I'm an undisciplined alcoholic. And I'm an alcoholic. Which is the reason why I have to do step 11. Right? I heard somebody mention, you know, they asked Dr. Bob one day, you know, oh, I want to talk to you about the spiritual side of this thing. I want to talk to you about the spiritual angle here in AA. And, you know, Dr. Bob's like, no, the spiritual thing is the whole thing. The whole thing is the spirit. The whole thing is God. The whole thing is prayer and meditation. Right? But if I am an alcoholic, you know, where am I with this? We've heard people say, you hear a lot of relapse stories. Anybody hear relapse stories when you come up here? You hear people talk about relapse? Mm-hmm. Now, everyone's got different experiences with it. But sometimes I hear those certain ones. And I don't know why, but the ones that I tend to hear a lot is, I stopped praying and meditating. Mm-hmm. I stopped praying and meditating. Then it's, you know, I stopped going to meetings. Then it's, I stopped helping other people. Right? Now, somebody may have said that they stopped doing their fourth step. They may have stopped making amends, but chances are they weren't praying or meditating, you know, during that point in time either, right? Because chances are, if I am pretty well concerned about this prayer thing, I have a chance of finishing that inventory. I have a better chance of making that amends. You know, I have a better chance of helping out that newcomer, right? Am I taking it seriously? Am I taking this AA thing seriously? Am I taking these 12 steps seriously? Am I taking this idea that I'm an alcoholic? Or do I have some time all of a sudden and now I'm good? You know? You know, the drink thing doesn't seem to be a big deal. And all of a sudden I think I'm in control of my life again. Do I start to think that I'm in control of the stopping and the starting? You know, I got 2 months. I got 3 months. You know, my wife likes me again. I got a couple dollars in my pocket. You know, I did my year's time. I can get my car back on the road. I kind of don't need some of this stuff. You guys signed all my papers. The court says it's cool. Well, great. AA has that for you. If you want some papers signed, that's great. But if you want to be free from alcohol for done and for good, there are requirements, right? And am I taking this seriously? And am I taking this idea of prayer seriously? Right? What am I doing? Am I making space for prayer. Like, at my place, I have a physical space. This is my prayer space. And I have little things that kind of help me along. I got some books here. I got some AA prayers. I got some AA books. I got things that Bill Wilson wrote. I got books from other belief systems out there. Right? Little statues. I got candles. I got little, you know, those prayer cards for people who died and passed away. I got those people lined up. You know? I do. You know? I ask them for help. Or I pray for them. Right, I got lists of people that I need to pray for. Sometimes they're sponsees, sometimes they're sick people, sometimes they're people I don't like. You know, but I got my lists. You know, I got a little mat in front of there, and it doesn't have, your thing doesn't have to look like this, but I'm making space in my life, in my house, for prayer. Right? Am I making space inside me for prayer? Am I making time for prayer? And my, I have a spiritual advisor outside of AA. I have them inside, I have them outside. One thing he tells me is that I need to guard my prayer time, my time with God, like a jealous lover. So that means, like, if I'm kneeling down and I'm saying my prayer time or whatever, and an AA calls me and I think they may be going through something, do I stop and pick up the phone? Because that's how I am. Oh, it's a sponsee. Let me pick up the phone. Oh, it's this guy. Let me chat with him for a few minutes. Oh, let me take care of this. Next thing I know, I got to go to work. I didn't finish those prayers. I didn't do that meditation. Oh, you know what? I'm going to have to take a break at work, right? And then do some meditation time. How's that go for you? Anybody do that break at work with the meditation stuff? You know, I'm lucky if I can get 10 seconds of just closing my eyes and being quiet at work, right? And then what about, oh, I'll do it when I get home. And then what happens, right? The Yankees are in extra innings. You know, got to catch that last bit. You know, so-and-so's having a, you know, State of the Union. I got to watch that. Not saying that those things aren't important. They are. But all of a sudden, I'm not making space. I'm not taking this thing seriously. And all of a sudden, I'm pushing this thing called God off to the side. Right? Yeah. So am I making space in my life for this thing? Am I making time? Am I making space within me for it? And if I am having a hard time, like it says, if I'm having a hard time with this gut check, right, with the, you know, fear, foolish decisions, if I'm tiring easily and all these other things, right, and sometimes tiring easily, physically walking up the steps and stuff like that, there is a spiritual component too, right? When I'm spiritually fit, I tend to fly up the stairs a little bit with a little bit more ease. So there is that too. You know, somehow when I'm doing this stuff, I'm clear on my inventory, I'm making amends, I'm doing the prayer, I'm doing the meditation, I can run up and downstairs sometimes. When I'm not doing that stuff, I'm lucky to make it up the stairs. All of a sudden, like, you know, a 10-pound bag of kitty litter is like, feels like 50 pounds. You know, is there a correlation between that and my spiritual life? For me, I see it. So if I'm having a hard time with prayer and meditation, here's some more questions to ask yourself. On page 87, am I asking my wives and friends to join me? It might be, I know it sounds kind of weird, right? But actually, if I actually invite my friends and the people that I'm dating into prayer and meditation, now all of a sudden I got a thing. All of a sudden we got a time. All of a sudden, you know, we're working on something together. Now all of a sudden there is prayer and meditation happening in my life. Right? Am I asking my wives, am I asking my friends to join me in morning meditation? Right? Or husbands? Right? Or neighbors? Or community church people? Am I inviting them into it? You know, or am I getting together and we're saying the claps and we're doing the prayers and we're reading the books, but then, you know, pray off to ourselves? Aren't we inviting other like-minded people to pray with us? That might help you if you're having a hard time. Here's another thing that might help. Page 87. If you belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. Am I doing that? Am I attending to those things that, you know, I'm half in the door, I'm half out the door? You know, I'm half into this philosophy, I'm half out of it. Well, which half are you giving? You know, can you put all of yourself into that one half for a little while and see what that's like? Am I attending to that also? It might be possible. And if you're not a member of a religious body, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles which we have been discussing. Am I doing that? Mm-hmm. Right? You know, again, this is if I'm having a hard time with prayer. If I don't know what to say, I don't know what to do. Well, they're making some definite suggestions here. Why don't you grab some prayers from people who have been doing it for a long time? Why don't you, as it says here, helpful books also. Am I looking out for other books? Am I looking out for other things? Am I going out to other teachers? Am I seeking advice from priests, ministers, rabbis, monks, astrologists, astronomers? Whatever your concept of God is, am I going out there and am I seeking experience with these other people and these other things? You know, it doesn't mean I have to be a Buddhist, right? You know, I studied Buddhist meditation for a year with a Jewish fella in Staten Island. You know, he was an alcoholic. You know, a sicko. You know, I didn't become a Buddhist and I didn't become Jewish. But I had an experience. My sponsor said all the time, seek experience, seek experience, seek experience. This whole thing is about maintenance and growth. Because it's one thing to maintain something that's half broken, right? There has to be growth too. I have to be trying to constantly repair this thing. Constantly be trying to get better. It has to be maintenance and it has to be growth. Am I keep seeking? Am I quick to see where religious people are right? And am I making use of what they offer? These are some ideas, right? Go ask them, what do you do? You know, what do you do for meditation? What do you do for prayers? Do you do that? Right? You know? Or am I holding on to anger, resentment towards these people, towards these communities, towards these books? Right? Am I holding, like, okay, I'm an AA, I'm Joe Spiritual now, but I still got all these resentments towards that church, that faith, that book. You know? It's a good question. And if you do, what are you doing about it? Are you writing inventory? Do you owe an amends? Do you owe an amends to that community? Have you been backstabbing that community, you know, for all your days, sitting around here hanging out in AA, all Joe Cool and Joe Spiritual, but yet taking knocks at this faith, that faith, or the other? I'll tell you what, I do. I've made amends to those communities. All the different sects of the Christian faith, I've made amends. You know, Jewish faith, I've made amends. It's a question, do I owe an amends? Will that help me get to the other side of this problem, some of these problems I may have with prayer and meditation? Will that help me seek a new experience? It says on page 85, that I shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Am I? Are we being shy? Like, are we being shy about this matter of prayer? You know, we said, Dr. Bob said, right, the God thing is the whole thing. Am I coming to AA and not talking about God? Am I coming to AA and not talking about this power? Am I coming to AA and not talking about prayer? Or am I afraid of offending the newcomer? Oh gosh, if I talk about prayer, he may not come back. But is it possible that that's exactly what that guy needs in order to make it to the next meeting? Or to make it from step one to step four? Mm-hmm. Is it possible what he needs more now, we should be feeding him, is God, is a solution, is an idea of prayer? Doesn't have to be a religious prayer. Does that newcomer need a prayer? Or am I a fear of talking about God in these rooms where we should be having, as my first sponsor said, pep rallies for God. Pep rallies for God. Right? How many times do we talk about God at our celebration meetings? Or are we talking about how I did it? What I did. What I got. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I got nothing without God. But am I being shy about this matter of prayer? It says here, better men than me are using it constantly. Do I believe that? Do I believe that? Or do I still walk around here thinking I'm better than everybody? Am I smarter than this religion? Am I smarter than all these people that are doing it? Am I smarter than these people that got CDs and books and, you know, all these different programs for, you know, for meditation? I mean, I got meditation apps, you know, but I'm not going to listen to these guys because they shave their head. I'm not going to listen to these guys because they bang the tambourine on the subways. You know, I'm not going to listen to these guys because they talk in tongues or whatever like that. Well, how about trying it? Or am I still thinking I'm better than most people? How about my fellow AA? You know, who talks about, well, I use it out of the 12 and 12. Well, you're a stupid 12 and 12 guy. What the hell do you know? Or am I that 12 and 12 guy reading that 12 and 12 prayer and I'm like, you stupid big book people. What do you know? Right? Am I doing it in here? Am I walking around AA better than everybody else? Better than my next fellow alcoholic? You know, oh, I do 2 minutes. You do one, I'm better. Right? You know? It says here, better men than me are using it constantly. And trust me, I need a lot of help just to be a normal man. Forget about a better one. It says, it works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. What does that mean? There's a proper attitude for prayer. At least according to this book. And it's on page 87. Okay? It says, we ask especially, page 87, in the middle of the page, we ask especially for freedom from self-will. And be careful to make no request for myself only, that I may only ask for myself, however, if others will be helped. Right? I am careful to never pray for my own selfish needs. Right? That's the proper attitude towards prayer that they're talking about it. Right? I'm not saying, God, give me this, God, give me that, God, give me this, God, give me that, take away this, do this for me. Well, who the hell am I? Obviously, I still think I'm I definitely tell you, if I'm walking around with my prayers like that, not only am I walking around thinking I'm better than most men who are praying, I'm also think I'm smarter than God, because I know what I know what I need better than him. And it says, I need to have this proper attitude and I need to work at it. My sponsor in early recovery, he had me reading these pages every day. Yeah, my very first book, boom, he wrote a prayer on there. I want you to write this prayer. It's called the Obsession Prayer. Dear God, please remove the obsession, compulsion, thought. No, well, a sponsor later on had me write that down. Dear God, please remove the obsession, compulsion, thought, and desire to drink. Dear God, please remove the obsession, compulsion, thought, and desire to drink. Dear God, please remove the obsession, compulsion, thought, and desire to drink. He told me to say it all the time. He said to say it like a crazy person. He had me write in here that lay aside prayer that this young lady read. Right? He had me write in there. Anytime you pick up this book, he says, read that prayer. Then he had me write down another prayer. It's called the ego prayer. Dear God, please smash my ego. Dear God, please smash my ego. Then he writes there, asterisk, 84 to 88 every day. One day sober, 84 to 88 every day. He's not waiting for me to have a four-step experience. He's not waiting for me to have a first-step experience. He's immediately getting me into these ideas of saying things like, no matter how far down the scale I've gone, I can see how my experience can benefit others on day one. And then starting to take a look at personal inventory. Where am I selfish, dishonest, and frightened? Do I owe an apology? Do I pause when agitated or doubtful throughout the day? When I retire at night, I ask myself these questions. When I start my day, I look at the 24 hours ahead. Right from the get-go, this guy has me into this stuff right away. He doesn't wait. He doesn't wait for me to be a guru. He doesn't wait for me to have a philosophy. He doesn't wait for me to have a concept of God that's agreeable to anybody else, including myself. He has me doing this every day. And I had a sponsor who had me take index cards and put these prayers. Dear God, please remove the obsession, compulsion, thought, and desire to drink. Dear God, please remove the obsession, compulsion, thought, and desire to drink. He also had me fill in other things that I was struggling with, right? You may have, I did the same prayer with cigarettes, other things I struggle with, right? Problems other than alcohol. Put on, dear God, please remove the obsession, compulsion, thought, and desire. Fill in the blank, right? And then he said, put it wherever your eyesight goes. Take an index card, put it on the light switch. You use the light switch, put it on the light switch. You go and you put socks on every day, put it on your sock drawer. You put on underwear every day, put it in your underwear drawer. Do you hit the alarm clock? Yeah, put it at the alarm clock. You know, I have a CD player, multi, right? Hit on the CD player, right? Where I shave, right? Where I get dressed, the mirror that I look at, the computer at work, right? It gets to the point, right, where you start to see, dear God, please remove the obsession, compulsion, thought, and the desire to drink. Dear God, please smash my ego. You see these index cards right on my dashboard of my car. Dear God, please remove the obsession. Lay aside this. Dear, smash my ego. Here on the console here, whatever. I used to take a raffle ticket, a 50-50 raffle ticket. It went inside my cigarette pack. On the back side of my cigarette pack went an AA coin that they gave me after 30 days, and I wasn't really even sober, but I still held that coin. inside the coin, on the flip side, the ticket. Every time I saw the ticket, I said the prayer. Every time I saw the coin, I saw the prayer. Put a coin in your pocket. Every time you feel it, say the prayer. You bend down, you touch your shoes, say the prayer. Right? He would say to me, you say this prayer when you believe it. You say this prayer when you don't believe it. You say this a prayer when you're obsessing about a drink. You say this a prayer when you're not obsessing about a drink. You say it when you're tying your shoes. You say it when you're dialing the phone. You say it all the time like a crazy person. And why do I need to say it like a crazy person? Because I'm a crazy person. Dude, I think like a crazy person. Like, okay, after you start drifting away with the alcohol and the other things that kind of give me some ease and comfort for a little while, once those things start turning away, this crazy person starts thinking about dying. This crazy person starts thinking about me dying, you dying, let's all go down together. That's how this thing goes for me. I sit in traffic, there's nowhere to go, so much traffic, and I have thoughts in my head of slamming the gas to smash the car in front of me, putting it in reverse, smash this guy, turning it all the way to... I know I'm not going to go anywhere, but I'm going down angry, and you're all going to know about it without a drink in me, without a drink, you know? This is what goes on in my head. Restless, irritable, discontent, without a drink, I want to die, I want to kill people. Standing on the subway car, waiting for the subway car to come in, realizing I didn't do a great job on my acting audition. My mind just says to me, hey, why don't you jump in front of that subway car? My sponsor said, this thing wants me dead. It'll settle for me drunk. It'll settle for you loaded. But it wants me dead. And I am more convinced of that now, of 10 years without a drink, than I was one day without one. I'm more convinced that this thing is out to kill me. Probably knows that I've got some sort of ego around the drink. Let's just skip to the chase. And on this, the next chapters here, talks all about that guy. Right? 10 years without a drink. You know, one guy without a solution, or whatever. A guy without a drink with a solution, and a guy without a drink without a solution. And that guy's thinking about the same thing he thought about on day one. Do I kill myself, or do I go on the bitter end with this thing? With or without a drink, this thing is out to kill me. So, I got index cards all over the place like a lunatic. Dear God, please remove the obsession compulsion. Friday nights were tough. I don't know about you people. Friday nights were tough. I mean, every day was tough. Every moment of every second is tough to stay sober, you know, especially in early recovery without having a process, without having regular all the time contact with a sponsor and stuff like that. I'm on a Friday night, I'm rocking back and forth like this on the with my butt to the ground in the center of the dining room, you know. Dear God, please remove the obsession compulsion. Don't let me drink. God, grant me the serenity to accept. And I don't know what I'm saying. I don't care what I'm saying. This is what the guy said. And I'm sitting rocking back like a lunatic just to get me to the bars closing, just to get me to sleep at night, just to get me to the alarm clock in the morning. Right? Maybe the newcomer needs just that to get to the next meeting, to get to the next phone call. Right? But all over the place. And then at my job, because... I mean, I was drinking. I wasn't getting the fancy jobs, right? I had to work for myself, you know. But even at work, I shared an office. You know, I'm the type of guy who would have a rum bottle in this drawer and a rum bottle in this drawer, right? One in the closet and then a cooler in the car while I'm working for myself. But you know what? After you removed all that stuff, God bless you, there was a Post-it. Let's say a green Post-it, like a special color Post-it that was ego prayer, ego prayer, ego prayer, obsession prayer. One would go on the computer screen. One would go on the desk like this here. One would go in that drawer where I pull it out. One would go into the bathroom. And there were just little Post-it notes, again, like a crazy person. But guess what that sponsor was getting me to do? Conscious contact with God all through the day. It's saying constantly, better men than I are using it. All the time, all through the day, this guy had me praying if I believed in God or not and stuff all day long, like a crazy person for sure. That by the time it comes to step 11, this idea, this concept is not a big deal. In fact, it's like, okay, whatever else. I mean, thank you for getting me this far. You want me to say some other cool stuff? Sure. You want me to do that third step thing? You on my knees? Sure, you got it, man. Seven step prayer? You got it. You want me to twist them away into the opposites, like I told you a couple weeks ago? Sure, I'll do that too. Whatever you want me to meditate? Sure. You know, what did he have me do? Right? Meditation. Right, Dave? Right? Our first sponsor. We had columns in our home group. Right? Fifth step. We're in the fifth step with him. sits us up against the column, has me sit like, the cross-legged yoga thing, whatever. Sit up like this, keep your hands like this, keep your, hands like this. Imagine a string in the back of your head pulling it up like this, whatever. And then he goes, and then just focus on your breath. Now, I wanted that teacher to tell me, the power of light always go through me and in me, let me focus on all, breathe in God, breathe out God. Like, I wanted to hear all of this, great, guru type stuff, because this guy was definitely that type of guy. Like, he had God. I wanted that. I was expecting him to tell me about, this prayer, this religion, this faith, these books, and all this other stuff. Focus on breath. Focus on breath. Be aware of your in-breath, be aware of your out-breath. Be aware of your in-breath, be aware of your out-breath. Be aware of your in-breath, be aware of your out-breath. Why? Because when my head is in the past and when my head is in the future, I want to die. Or if my head is in the past or my head is in the future, I want to kill you. I'm sorry, but that's how it is for me. Generally speaking, somebody's got to go. You know what I mean? But if I'm in the present moment, if I'm focusing on my breath, it's at this moment when I might have a chance at experiencing God. I might have a chance of at least not thinking about the past and not thinking about the present, but remaining centered in the future. Remaining centered in the present and not worrying about these other things, right? So, now, I talked to all of the different representatives of many of the different religions. If I didn't like this guy, I went to another guy. I didn't walk into the church on Elizabeth Street and say, okay, they're all jerks. No, I just went to the one on, Atlantic Avenue, and just tried out something, another place, and talked to another faith, and sought another book, and talked to another AA that was awake, and to see what they're doing. And then I started using their CDs, and using their guided meditations, and using their practices, and going to Staten Island at 9 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday to do that other stuff with that guy that I was telling you about. I do all these different things to try and seek an experience and have an experience with this stuff. And yeah, you want to know what happened? I have that pillow on the ground, and what happens is, if you do it, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, or you do it every day, you keep working at it, yeah, you do start to levitate off the pillow. But what happened to me, I started to levitate off the pillow, which was nice, it was really great. All of a sudden, I'm doing really great. But what happens is there's a ceiling. My head keeps hitting the ceiling. Now I'm banging my neck. There's a ceiling fan running around, right? The window's open and it's cold and now there's a draft up there. So I needed to do something also, as my current sponsor says, Finley, that's all great. It's cool that you're a seeker. I love that you're a seeker and you go out and seek all these things or whatever. But this thing, AA, this is about the practical application of life, mm-hmm. Right? You can hang up and meditate with the chandeliers all day long or whatever, but you need to go out here and do this thing in the real deal, because I can levitate to the ceiling and still go outside wanting to kill myself. I can still go outside being resentful, fearful, and dishonest. Practical application of life. So you need to do some other things. So, and it says very clearly that we shouldn't be vague about this. About this matter. It says it's easy to be vague about this matter. And it's like, again, am I being vague about this matter in Alcoholics Anonymous? Am I being vague about this matter with my sponsees? Am I being vague about this matter with the other person in AA who's having the experience that I'm having? 2 days, 30 days sober? Am I like kind of hiding and ducking around this stuff? Or can I have an honest conversation? Like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Do you know what you're doing? Can I borrow what you're doing? Try that out? Or my ego is just getting me in the way. Am I being shy or being vague about this matter? It says it's easy to do so. So I get it. We get it. These guys get it. Yep, they believe you can make some definite and valuable suggestions, right? And upon awakening, I look at the 24 hours a day ahead, right? I consider my plans for the day. Before I begin, first thing that has to happen, dear God, please direct my thinking. I especially ask that it be divorced from self-pity, self-seeking, and dishonest motives. For a guy like me, that doesn't mean after the coffee's made. For a guy like me, that doesn't mean after I check the cell phone messages. For a guy like me, that doesn't mean after I take your call. For a guy like me, that doesn't mean after I go to the bathroom or after I take a shower. For me, from the second my eyes open up and I am definitely in the world, even if I'm going to linger back and forth and on my bed for an hour, which is what sometimes what I do, hitting the snooze button, but, you know, throwing a heating pad under my back or something like that. But during that time where I know I'm with you, like I know I'm in the world, I need to say that prayer right away. Why? Because inside my bed is the Incredible Hulk. And it's looking to tear me to shreds and ruin my dignity and ruin my relationships and ruin my self-esteem. Right? And it lives inside of me. I believe, like me, I don't know if I said it before, but I feel like I am David Banner walking around life trying to keep this monster at bay because it's going to come out. And the only thing that I'm lucky enough to do in Alcoholics Anonymous is to have various shades of green so that I'm not in a situation where I'm like, what the hell happened last night? Why is my shirt ripped? Why do I have a scratch on my face? Why am I wearing different clothes? Right? Why are there holes in the wall? So for me, I'm this guy who's searching around from meeting to meeting, place to place, teacher to teacher, looking for a solution to try to keep this little animal quiet, at peace, right? Peace inside. So for me, open up my eyes, laying there, not laying there, but before I check the cell phone, I'm telling you, if you send me a text message, there's no guarantee you're not going to get the monster without me saying that prayer first. So I got to just say, even if I'm laying there for a while, dear God, please direct my thinking. I especially ask that it be divorced from self-pity, self-seeking, and dishonest motives. Those are my favorite motives. Right? Those are my motives, you know? I never realized how much I was I think I was in AA for a bunch of years before I realized it said self-pity. Because that was one that was working for a long time. It says, under these conditions, asking God to direct my thinking, I can employ my mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gives me a brain to use. Well, that's nice to hear. Right? God's already entrusting me with a brain to rely upon my faculties. Right? That's power. That's power for a guy like me. For a guy who wants to smash up cars while sitting on the FDR. You know? That's power. He's now telling you, you got a brain to use. I want you to use it. Go out, young man. Take care of these things. Go represent me. It says, my thought life will be on a much higher plane when my thinking is cleared of these motives. When I face indecision about the day, I may not be able to determine which course to take. So here, we ask God for an inspiration, right? A divine influence, right? A sense of awareness, a thought, or an inspiration, or a decision. Now, I'm the type of guy, in early recovery, for the first couple of years, I'm doing this, right? I need to know, am I going to marry you, or am I going to marry you? Right? I need to know. So God, you know, is she the one, God? Is she the one? If she's the one, let me know. If she's the one, let me know. You know, God, I'm kind of stupid. I don't always see the things that you're going to send me. So, you know, I need the billboards. You know, yes, it's Teresa. Finley, marry her on the 22nd. You know, like that type of thing. Like, I need that type of signs, God. And I'll go, let me know, God. Is this the deal? I want to do what you want to do. I definitely want to do what you want to do. But is she the one? Do I take this job or do I take that job? Do I take this job or do I take that job? Do I give up this job? Do I keep acting? Do I start waitering tables? Like, what do you want me to do? Do I move to New York? Do I move to Jersey City? What do I do? And I used to be like that. I used to be like that. What do you want me to do? With whatever humility I could say exists with that kind of frame of mind, I'm actually thinking I am asking God, I want to do what you want to do, but I'm annoying the crap out of him. Now, is my concept of God where I need to annoy the crap out of him? Well, maybe. Right? Maybe it is. But this book says I need to do what winds up being my favorite words on these four pages. And it's the everything for me when it comes to AA and this thing. It says, we relax and we take it easy. Mm-hmm. We do not struggle. It doesn't mean that I try and worry and worry and worry until an answer comes. It says, okay, God, you want me to be with Teresa or you don't want me to be Teresa? All I know is today you want me to be the best guy I can be to Teresa. You want me to take this job or you want me to take this job? All I know is that today you want me to be the best interviewer I can be and be the best employee for my current job. Right? And be the best manager of the employees that I work for. you know, the best representative of the restaurant that I'm managing or whatever my job is. That's what you're asking me to do today. I don't, you know, I may not always know what God's will is for me, you know, but I can definitely tell you what it isn't. You know, we usually have an idea what he doesn't want me to do, right? Now, in early recovery, he doesn't want me to hit her anymore, right? He doesn't want me slamming doors and, you know, calling the police or, you know, asking the neighbors to call the police and things like that. That's kind of obvious. Maybe a good idea to take out the garbage or whatever, stuff like that. But then there's other things. And it's just simply the stuff that's right in front of me, right? You're an employee at this restaurant. Go be an employee. You have to ride the subway. Go ride it, right? You have to deal with people on the subway. Go smile. You want, you know, you got to go meet with a sponsor. Do the step work. You got to read the pages. Read the pages. The guy outside of AA that you're seeking spiritual help says, go read this book. Read that book. Right? It's really easy. You know, once I become on an awakened path and I experience this thing, God's going to be putting people in my life that are going to help guide me into places. All I have to do is listen to what they're saying. All I got to do is do the thing that's in front of me and let tomorrow be tomorrow. I'm not in control of it anyhow. I'm not even in control of this moment. So the best thing for me was I just relax and take it easy. And so now I just throw a question out. Hey, God, I need to do this. Let me know. What do you want me to do? That's it. And then I go stay in my current job until I get hired by another one in 5 months. I interview in June. I get hired in November. Okay. But I didn't toil for those times. I was present for everybody and everything during that time, being the best employee I could be. That first month was difficult, for sure. That first month was like, you know, well, what am I going to do at that, you know, my current job, because part of my head was out the door. But presence. Focus on breath. Stay present. My will for you is to be this guy today. We'll see what happens tomorrow. Right? Now, what does he want me at this job tomorrow? I don't know. Yeah, right now he wants me here, I guess. So, practical application of life. I just ask God. I send it out there. You take care of the rest. All right? I'm often surprised how the right answers come after I've tried this for a while. So it's telling me I have to try it. I have to work at it. And I got to do it for a while. Right? So I got to be continuously doing it, right? It says what used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration, you know, bet on the nine horse in the fourth race, you know, gradually becomes a working part of my mind. I don't know where I'm going, turn left. I don't know where I'm going, turn right. Oh, there's the Exxon. Boom. You know? Just sometimes that's just what happens. It just gradually works. I don't worry about it. If I'm lost, I'm lost. Like, okay, you're going to take me there. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it's probable we're not going to be inspired at all times. So my early recovery, I said, how do I know that this is an inspired thought, and how do I know that this is me? My sponsor would say, sit. Pray, meditate. When you're done, write what comes from the meditation. Then you take that stuff from the writing of meditation and go to somebody who's awake, and then you share that meditation. Then after you share that meditation with them, you take their considerations back to you. You hear what they got to say, and then you meditate on those things. Maybe you want to make a list of pros and cons or whatever and sit with those. Then you'll have an idea of, yeah, he wants you to move to California, or no, it's a good idea to stay in Jersey for today. Right? I don't know. But that's how my sponsor answered that question. And I remember it calls to mind something I did with my dad when I was a kid. And prayer for me as a kid, because I had very religious parents, and they did a wonderful job passing on information to me and their experience And for good or for bad, for whatever it was, they passed off their experience as best as they could. And when I was a kid, I used to say, I had this thing on my drawers that said, unfailing prayer to St. Anthony. You want to know something? To this day, 45 years old, that thing has not failed me yet. Now, I don't use it the way I did when I was a kid. When I lost my wallet, you know, with that $40 in it, when I was delivering the newspapers, I said that prayer. when I was hooking up with that girl and I wanted to be a bigger boy and I wanted to be like the mature guys and the guys in the locker room, I said that prayer. I even prayed for things that were sacrilegious, you know? You know? But whatever I prayed for, when I said those things, I got it. I got results. And you want to know that wallet? I got it like 20 years later. It showed up because I remembered all the other times that I got, you know, and that wallet showed up years later, but it showed up. I prayed for it. I asked for it. I got it, not what I wanted. And when I was younger and before coming in here, prayer for me was like, I don't want to go to hell. And that is a sufficient reason to pray. So, I mean, you know, if that is your motivation for prayer, it is a sufficient reason to pray, right? For me, I believe in a higher power. For me, I also believe in a lower one. I also believe, you know, I don't want to go and to live on in misery, right? But my prayers were like, you know, get me this, get me that. My prayers were like, I remember I was so loaded. I was so loaded. I was doing so, I was in bad shape. And I'm driving on Highway 36, and there's tons of cops on the, you know, on 36, the west side. And in order for me to stay in the lines on a 50-mile-an-hour road, I had to do 20. Like, I could not. And I knew, I started doing 30. I was doing this. I'm doing 20. And I'm a pretty good, tell myself, I was a pretty good drunk driver, so I probably had some friends say the same thing or whatever like that. But at this point in time, I'm clearly loaded and I'm clearly whatever. I say the prayer, dear God, please grab this wheel. You know, dear God, angels and whatever, you know, be my foot pedal. And all of a sudden the car goes like this. And I'm doing 50 like a dart, loaded to the hotel where I got more booze and other stuff to get. But I got there, right? I had an experience with that type of prayer and this stuff happening. God, give me this. God, help me out of this. God, help me out of this. God, I don't want to go to hell. God, I don't want to go to the cops. God, I don't want to get arrested. God, I don't want her to leave me. God, I want her to take me back. God, I don't want to lose my job. But now there's been a change. And the change is now I do this thing because I love God. Because I want to be closer. Because I want to do what's right. Because I want to be a gentleman. Because I want to do His will for me. Even if I don't know what that is, I understand today it's to just, you know, read this book, say some prayers, get on my knees and do some stuff, and keep asking Him for help all throughout the day, or whatever it is my sponsor or people have me working on. I know that's the case today. There has been a shift and a change as the reasons why I pray. And when I was a kid, I remember my dad would say things like, you know, when God talks to you. And I remember saying to him, I don't know if I was a smart, I don't think I was. I was like, oh yeah, well what does He sound like? Right? And he did this thing. Maybe I'll tell you later. But He did this thing. He said, close your eyes. And He did this thing. And I was like, whoa. And I never thought about it again. But as I'm here in AA, as I'm here having these experiences, I suddenly get this experience and I suddenly hear that noise. And it's not a voice saying, do this, young man, or you're, you know, whatever. It's more just like this particular thing. And chills go up through my whole body. I feel it in my spine. I feel it in my head. I get, you know, the hair on my whatever stands up. And I'm like, I'm brought back to that, you know, 9-year-old kid sitting in the bed asking, Dad, what does God sound like? How do I know the Spirit, what the Spirit sounds like? Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's my experience. And what's funny is I never thought about it again until 30 years later or whatever it is. So now when I envision the 24 hours ahead, it goes like this. I'm not going, okay, work at 3, sponsor call at 12, shower at 1, jump on the subway by 2, get back on the subway before 12, otherwise it's murder with the F train, right? It's not like that. Used to be kind of something like that, kind of seeing the 24 hours and just checking things off, and maybe a list of a whole bunch of spiritual things I need to do, you know, say this prayer, do that prayer, do this meditation, read that book, read whatever, pray for this guy, pray for this one. But now it's like this. Now, I've written inventory. We're going to get to it. I write inventory. I know every day that this guy at work is going to piss me off. I just know it, Like, because I've been writing inventory all week. This guy shows up every day. I'm pissed off at this guy. Why? He talks fresh. He says jokes. He touches my face with his fingers. Like, you know what I mean? That's what this guy would do. He would touch my, you know what I mean? And he'd touch me face and whatever like that. You know? I know he doesn't mean to be a jerk or whatever. It's just his kind of like, his kind of, you know, way of doing things, right? You know, I put the spoons and forks this way. He puts them this way. It annoys the crap out of me. I keep doing this. He keeps switching it back. I'm always staying late to fix his job. All this other stuff. I know this guy, he's on my inventory, right? I know every day when I come out of that subway and I'm right by the Museum of Natural History, for some whatever reason, they don't even wait till they get to the top steps. They start pulling out their cell phone right in the middle of the first steps, and they get all doofy looking at their phone. They can't make it up the, right? You can't make it up the thing. I got to get to work. Where the hell, you know, just figure it out when you get up there, right? Get out the car, get out the subway door first. I know I'm going to have to deal with those trolls. Then I got the what? Then I got the you know, the spring chickens, you know, who are dressing very provocatively, kind of creates this other selfish thing inside of me. Mm-hmm. You know, leads me down other dark paths that lead me away from my relationship or other things, right? My relationship with God may even encourage me to do some other like adult behavior that I'm not really, you know, too comfortable with, or it's made clear to me that I shouldn't be doing mm-hmm. at this point in the time, right? I know I'm going to have to deal with that. So now, and, you know, I got the Sponzi calls or whatever. So now, the 24 hours ahead looks like this. You're going to sit, you're going to pray. You're going to sit in meditation, and you're going to focus for 30 minutes before your Sponzi's phone call. You're going to focus on them, what they're going through. You're going to get quiet. You're going to leave the subway. You're going to leave the house 15 minutes early. You're going to walk down the stairs quietly. You're going to be aware of your footsteps as they hit the concrete. You're going to breathe in and you're going to breathe out as you walk down the stairs into the subway and get on the subway car. If somebody's on the subway car that you know, tempts you or whatever, you're going to react calmly. You're going to react coolly. You're going to say a prayer. You're going to ask God to remove your selfishness, your lust, whatever it is. You're going to pick up that spiritual book that you've been working with, and you're going to read it. You're going to maybe take the book and read it like this, so you know the person's not in your view. If it becomes a bigger problem, you're going to get up. On the next stop, you're going to go and turn around. You're going to switch cars. When you get to work, you're going to say, "Hey, Mickey, how you doing today? How you doing with that nursing test? You doing good? You know? Is your wife, the pregnancy coming along good? Still working on the October due date?" Right? I'm now envisioning myself showing up a different guy. I'm showing up a different guy to the subway. I'm showing up a different guy to Mickey. I'm showing up a different guy walking the streets. I'm showing up a different guy for my sponsees. I'm showing up a different guy. All at the first imagining of the 24 hours ahead, I'm showing myself a different version of myself. Showing up. Because if I'm leaving 15 minutes early, chances are those people on the steps aren't going to kill me. Right? They're just going to, all right, walk around them. Right? Might even pray for one of them. Right? Might even be able to have a couple extra minutes to give somebody a hand who's looking for directions or something like that. But if I'm running late, nope, see you later, get out of my way, let me knock you over, let's do this stuff, I'm going to kill you. Right? When I'm not doing that, I see Mickey in the restaurant. I run right to the back, start changing my clothes in the back. So I'm trying to spend as much time as I can without him even seeing me. And then I'm playing the stupid game with the spoons and over here and, you know, passively, aggressively having a war over, like, silverware. Right? That's what happens. You know, awake in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the kind of stuff I'm doing. But because I'm writing inventory, because I'm answering these questions on a regular basis, I know what's bothering me. You know, I said this the other day, right? My mom was the type of person who is. Oh, no, yeah. She's that person that no one's awake. And she's downstairs in the kitchen, and you hear things getting banged around. Bang, bang. And then you hear, like, somebody left the coat on the, you know, coat on the chair. I tell everybody, don't put the damn coat, whatever. Who leaves the pots out there? All I did, ask you for 5 minutes, put the pot away and clean it. Is it a big deal to put it in the dishwasher or whatever? Screaming at, you know, Trump or Hillary or whoever's on the TV, the damn whatever. And they just, and so before, no one's in there. with her, right? This is just her, whatever, whatever. Now, did I? And now, what happens is, you know, for the previous years, it's like, oh God, I did the jacket thing. I'm the stupid guy with the pot, or you know, my poor father's getting it again over not sweeping up, or whatever the heck you know his list of chores was, you know, whatever. And I've got this anxiousness because the thing is, my mother reaches a certain pitch in her voice. I'm running to the bar. That's just my truth. My mother hits a certain pitch in her voice. I'm running away from home at 6. My mother hits a certain pitch in voice. I'm running away on Christmas Eve, right? You know, I get to a certain place where I start to feel uncomfortable. I run. That's my deal. Right. Run to the bar. Run to the guy on the corner. Run to so and so's house. Run to the adult club. Wherever it is, I'm running. Get me out of here, mm-hmm. Right? So now, 24 hours ahead, I'm going to go downstairs. I'm going to sit, I'm going to pray, I'm going to meditate before I go down, like I'm envisioning all that. I'm going to go downstairs, I'm going to walk down the stairs quietly, I'm going to walk down, you know, gently down the stairs. No matter what's going on, I'm going to say, hey, Ma, how you doing? How you doing today? You having a good day? I'm going to go up to her, no matter what's going on, I'm going to put my arms around her, and I'm going to hug her. And there were times where I say, and I'm going to stay there for 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3. Just so that I can get, just to break some sort of ice inside of me. Forget about what's going on with her. I'm not here to change her. I'm here to show up differently. If she says anything, she yells, she swears, she gets in your case, she threatens you, whatever like that, you're going to sit calmly, you're going to sit coolly, and you're going to listen. You're not going to turn up the TV remote louder to drown her out. Right, you're not going to ask her about questions about different things to get her off topic. Mm. You're just going to sit. You're going to listen, whatever. And I would do that because you know, AA. I mean, alcoholism brought me back to mom and dad at 36 years old. So, you know, that was a time practice thing. You know, and I can tell you now, it's like an instinctive thing. I don't leave that house without giving her a kiss. I don't come home without giving her a kiss. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if I forget, I'm running back in. How you doing today? Whatever, this, that, and the other thing. And you want to know what? Sometimes she's happy to see me in the morning. It's not a big deal. Like, whatever's going on with her, it stops the moment I come down. And it's not because I'm, like, you know, mm-hmm. like a great guy. I'm showing up differently. And because I imagine myself showing up to life differently the 24 hours ahead. If this situation comes around, boom. Right, and I'm going to do stuff like this. And if something comes up that I don't know about, I'm imagining myself pausing, asking God, turning to Him, saying, what do you want me to do? And then leaving it up to you. I'm going to relax. I'm going to take it easy. I'm going to trust you for whatever that thing is. And if there is a question, like, you know, moving, park my car on this side of the street or that side of the street, whatever, you know, if there's something, let me know. And then I relax, take it easy. I let it go. At the end of the night, I answer these questions. When I retire at night, I constructively review my day, right? It doesn't say destructively. The first 4 years or so was I'm destructively ruining my day, right? Because I'm looking at all the areas where I'm selfish. I'm looking at all the areas where I'm fearful. I'm looking at all these things, and I'm hating myself for not being better. I'm not recovered. What's wrong with you? You know, and I'm still seeing this and this. And God has always shown me a great fourth column all through my life. So He allows me to see these things, right? But it says here I'm constructively reviewing my day, right? These defects don't work for me, so I give them up. It says the instructions, you know, I ask God for forgiveness, what could I do better? And I move. But I ask myself individually, where was I resentful? Where was I selfish? Where was I dishonest? And I answer individually. I was resentful at Mickey. Why? He moved the spoons. Right? I'm selfish on the train. Why? I'm objectifying people on the train. You know, I'm not treating them like, you know, brothers and sisters. You know, sons and daughters of God. Right? I'm objectifying. Was I dishonest? Yeah. Told myself I was a loser. Told myself I was no good. Told myself I was ugly. Told myself there was no way she'd be interested in me. Mm. Told myself that she did that on purpose with the stupid cell phone on the steps. And that guy stopped at the yellow. Right? Where was I afraid? Yeah, afraid of being alone. Afraid of not being loved for who I am. Mm-hmm. Boom. Right? That's how it looked. Then, you know, was I thinking of myself most of the time? Well, you know, yeah, on the subway for sure, you know. Yeah, walking up the steps for sure. that time when I was with Mickey for sure. But the other times, you know, I was trying to be helpful to the customers, trying to be helpful to my coworkers, trying whatever. So, you know, 40% of the time I'm working on me or I'm, you know, selfish. The other 60% I'm at least trying to be of service to other people, right? What could I have done better? Well, I could have done this. I could have closed my eyes. I could have waited for the next train, whatever, right? But now it's different. So I used to answer all those questions. I used to write out all those answers, right? But now what I do is I write down the 9 questions to the first question, right? So, for example, I'm no longer just listing all the reasons why I'm resentful, and I'm listing all the areas where I was selfish, or I'm listing all the places where I was dishonest. And I am a guy who believes in pen and paper. I have that kind of sponsorship lineage where we kill forests to write inventory. That's what we do, right? But I told you, if I don't get on the F train by midnight, it's a 2-hour car ride. It's a 2-hour train ride, if I'm lucky, right? You know the F train. It's murder after midnight, right? And all the others are great, but and the F train's great all day long. But after midnight, it's very unpredictable. So my sponsor, I'm like, dude, I get home at 4 in the morning. I've got to turn around, work a double at 8 a.m. Like, I don't know how I'm going to do this inventory. My sponsor's like, well, dude, why don't you do it on your cell phone or whatever? And I got this kind of thing. And he's like, well, whatever, you know, iPad. I'm like, no, that's not the way we do it. You know, we use pen and paper and whatever. And he's like, well, how about this? I mean, you're on the thing for 2 hours. Can you pull out the iPad, start doing the same thing that you would normally do, and send it out? Now, even to this day, I do find a lot more with pen and paper. But for the sake of, you know, the exercise today, right, what this looks like now is like this. This is from January last year. It was my girlfriend's birthday. I was engaged to my fiance's birthday, right? We were engaged to be married at this point, January 2017. I'm angry at her for seeming disinterested, judgmental, and unappreciative of my birthday cake that I bought her. Now, this is just me answering resentful, right? Now I'm saying, how am I selfish in regards to this resentment? Well, I'm selfish because I'm placing expectations on her reactions. 2, I'm being selfish because she said she was tired and ready for bed. 3, she's not even into sweet things, and I'm buying her a cake. 4, she's Polish, from Poland, like the real deal, only in the country a few years. Her customs are different than ours. 5, I'm selfish. I told her that I'm not going to sleep with you in the bedroom. 6, oh no, where am I dishonest? The delusion is, it has nothing to do with me. She had her reaction to a cake. Has nothing to do with me. She's got her own issues with birthdays. She's got whatever. Has nothing to do with me. Right? What should I have done instead? So instead of, you know, I'm answering all of these things down right here with this one question. What should I have done instead? I should have kept quiet and waited for her to just love me. I could have done a 10-step. Looking at this more, I want this cake presentation to go the way it does in my family, and it's different in hers. I feel stupid for the way I presented the cake. Again, another way that I want to look like I'm a hero. Another resentment. Resentment at her for saying she's going to bed right away and then lingering for an hour and a half while I'm hoping to write inventory and calm down. Right? Like if she just would leave so I could write inventory and I could get okay and be spiritual, right? You know? I'm selfish. How am I selfish in regards to her lingering? Because she wants to talk about it. And I'm being distant and in no mood. Right? You don't react to the cake that I want. Screw you. You want to talk and be in an adult relationship and like pretend we're going to get married soon? Screw you. I'm not going to bed with you either. You know, and guess what? Like that's, you know what I mean? Like who would want to? Right? I'm selfish. I'm being a little extra inquisitive when talking about her ex. Right? I'm jealous. Which is pretty clear. There's nothing to worry about. 100% not clear. But I still want it. Now, at this point, I'm feeling insecure. She doesn't like the birthday cake. She's lingering around. She's not going to bed. She says she's going to bed. Now she's lingering around. Now I'm going to start asking her questions about her ex-boyfriend. Right? And meanwhile, I know there's nothing to worry about. Where am I dishonest? Delusional. I'm delusional with myself because there's nothing to worry about. What is my fear in connection into her staying up all night? I'm afraid of being alone, afraid of being cheated on, afraid of not being a good enough lover. What should I have done instead? Now, I don't know if this is exactly what I should have done instead, but it's something I could have done instead and came to me at the time with prayer. I could have left her birthday cake for her to look at on her own at another time. Right? So, that's what it looks like for me now. Right? Now, you know, it does take a little bit more time. Right? But what happens is, oh, hey, there was a selfish one that I wanted to read here. Selfish. I've got her horseback riding for her birthday. Right? So this is selfish. It's a totally other question, not resentment. So I pointed out the brilliant reasoning for my choosing to go horseback riding for her birthday. I wanted to prove to her I was right. Fear. Fear of what others think of me. Fear of financial insecurity. Resentment. I resent her for breaking the plan. Two, I resent myself for being so right about everything. Where am I dishonest? Well, it's January. It's cold. Two, it's not my gift. I give her a gift, and now I got rules on how it's supposed to be displayed, how it's supposed to be enjoyed, how you're supposed to react to it, and everything like that. Three, where am I dishonest? Now we could get two good days. We can have the birthday, and we could have the horseback riding day, but I'm not allowing myself to see it because I'm dishonest with myself about all this. So hopefully we get two good days out of the deal. What should I have done instead? I should have reassured her that I understood and I look forward to doing it with you whenever you want. It's your gift. But this is me, right? Whatever, 8 years, 9 years, whatever I'm dealing with at that time in sobriety, and that's how I write inventory now. So when I write the first question, I answer the nine questions wherever I can see it. Second question, nine questions, da-da-da-da, so on and so forth. And then I take those answers, and I bring them into the morning. So therefore, now I'm showing in the next 24 hours how I'm going to show up different for her. How I'm going to give her an apology for my behavior. The words I'm going to say in that apology. The temperament I'm going to use when I show up for that apology. Showing up early and doing all the other things to make it right. Right? Write the inventory. That comes into the 24 hours ahead. It also comes into my 10th step like we talked about last week. And that's probably enough, right? Out of time. So, thank you again for having me. It really means a lot.